Welcome back. After a brief stretch to implementing a data warehouse with SQL Server 2012 Jumpstart, I'm George Squillace, and here we have Rich Curry.
Howdy, howdy. Guess what, George?
We're getting close to the end of development time.
We are. And there's only a couple of things left that we need to talk about. We need to talk about configuration, and we need to talk about deployment, and that's where we're headed. But before you can actually do deployment, you better make sure that you're set up for production, that you have troubleshot the package to make sure everything's there, and that you configure it so that if something happens down the road, you have the ability to check it out. We need to be able to do debugging. We need to be able to set up logging and event handlers. And only, George, after that's all done, can we actually do our deployment.
So first up,
troubleshooting. And troubleshooting, folks, is as much an art form as it is an approach.
Well put.
Troubleshooting is about being the person who can't quit, the one who never gives up until they understand and are able to fix whatever it was that just went wrong. You got to be able to think out of the box. You got to be able to be imaginative, because many times the problems that occur are not issues with a package per se, but are issues due to the environment supporting the package breaking down. Maybe files that haven't been put where they're supposed to. Maybe invalid values set for parameters and things like that.
There's a lot of moving parts here.
Oh, yeah. There are a ton of them. So we really want to talk about in here what troubleshooting in SSIS is all about, as well as the different approaches that are available. Now, in SSIS, when we are trying to figure out what problems have occurred, that's what troubleshooting is all about. It's about package execution and whether or not something has executed successfully. If something does go wrong, we might need to figure out where execution paths are pointing. We might need to find out what variable values are at the time it failed. We might want to go out and find out what events have transpired during the execution process. And we may even want to just know, was it successful or was it not successful? Now, the approach that you use, there are a couple.
I like that word, approach.
And that's what it is. It's an approach. It is a way that you deal with problems. Now, that doesn't mean that it's all about how you deal with it. You also have to set yourself up to be able to deal with it by setting up things like logging and event handlers to be able to track through what's happening as your package executes. But debugging is an interactive process of monitoring things as it's running. You might want to be able to pause a package as it's executing when it gets to a certain point in its execution. I want to stop it when it goes to look at that directory to grab a file and see what that file value is. You may want to watch the execution as it goes through step by step and see what kinds of progress it's making. You may want to examine what certain variable values are, like maybe, I don't know, the execution time, the username, if you're debugging a security issue.
Oh, all kinds of things.
All kinds of stuff. Even programmed user variables and what they have at the time. And here's the cool part, George.
What's that?
You can even modify the values in the middle of execution to see if that really does fix the problem.
Oh, you don't want to steal thunder for later, though. Okay. I know you have some things to show.
Okay, we'll wait. Now, here's the other piece of this. Data flows are not executions. They're data flows. It's data going from point A to point B and going through the pipeline. A control flow is an executable. A data flow, or the pieces inside the data flow, I should say, are not executables themselves. I may want to examine the records as they go from one transform to the next, and I have the ability to set up what are called data viewers to do that. We also have the ability to configure logging. Logging is an ability to record the messages that are being generated by the execution as they occur and put them out somewhere so that they can be viewed later on. We also have the ability to configure event handlers. Remember I talked earlier about that on-error event,
yep,
George?
I do.
Okay, so on-error is just a single event. There are lots of other events that we can also configure to do the same thing. Now, let us go, and now we are going to delve into debugging. What do you think?
Sounds good.
All right. So debugging itself, there are really a couple of pieces here. We've got breakpoints, which can be used to pause execution. We've got watches, which can be used to examine variables. And we've got data viewers, which are used to examine the data flow in between transforms. Now, a breakpoint, as I mentioned, is an indication that when I get to this specific task, I want execution to kind of go, okay, hey, Rich, I'm here. Hang out here for a minute. And Rich goes, oh, okay, I'll tell you when to continue. It pauses it. It gives me a chance to see what's going on before I get to that next step in the process.
And this sounds more like a development time activity than a runtime activity.
Absolutely. You really do not want to have breakpoints kicking in a production package. And actually, once you get into the server, they're not going to anyway. As long as you're in data tools, that's when those breakpoints will be effective. You can set a breakpoint on any container, any control flow task in a container. You can configure it to stop every time it gets there. You can configure it to stop on a multiple of times that it gets there, so like every fifth or every 10th or every 25th. You could even set it where it's going to stop only after it gets to the 100th time that it got there. Okay? So
a ton of control.
Yeah, it is. It's very, very fine-grained control. Now, a watch, no, it's not something that you tell time with, although that works too. A watch, okay, it's getting late, George. I'm sorry. I tried for the good joke. Apparently, it didn't work. You should have seen the looks from the peanut gallery in the room on that one. My apologies, everyone. So a watch is the ability to put a window up in SQL Server Data Tools that is going to continuously display the value of a variable and notify you if that variable changes by highlighting the value in red. I can set up watches for any variable defined that is currently in scope. Here's that word again.
Yep, and I see both user and system variables listed here.
Absolutely, because it's not just user variables that you may be interested in the value. You may have functionality that's dependent on specific variable values for system variables as well. Now, the watch window is only for requested variables that are currently in scope. The locals window will display all variables that are currently in scope. Now, the last thing that we really want to talk about in here about examining what's going on is how to delve into the process that's occurring within the inside of a data flow. I can set a breakpoint on a data flow task. But that then is going to break when it gets to the task. I can't interrupt it. I can't set breakpoints on the individual transformations within a data flow task. The only methodology that I've got, the only technology available to do it in there is what's called a data viewer. Now, some of you who used SSIS in earlier versions...
Insert sighs and cries.
Yeah, this is one that I personally was kind of disappointed. It was cool, But the reality is I never used it.
Yeah, yeah, same.
Not for real. You had the ability to set up histograms. You had the ability to set up three or four different ways
scatter
to
plots.
Look at the data. Now a data viewer is just that. It shows you the data. Data viewers do interrupt the data flow. So if you have a data viewer that's in between two transforms, when the data goes through that pipeline, it's going to be displayed the first X number of records. You can configure that. And then it's going to stop, and it's going to wait for you to say, okay, continue on and show me the rest. Now, you can also disconnect the data viewer so that once it's captured that block of records, you disconnect it. The data flow then picks up and continues. You can continue to look at the records that it captured at the same time. Now, those are copies of records.
Yes.
They are not extracted from the data flow. Okay? So let's go and take a look at debugging a package. And in my virtual machine here, I've got a couple of tasks. I've got a copy source file, I've got a load data, and I've got a delete copied file. The copy source file task, I'm going to right click on it. And when I get to the right click, I've got edit breakpoints. If I go to the breakpoints, notice it's now displaying a list of the events that can happen to that particular task. Okay, now I'm going to give you a little preview here real quick.
Here you go.
This is also going to play a part in my event handlers.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. So I now choose which of the events that I want it to stop on. If I choose, for example, a pre-execute, then it's going to stop prior to that event actually, before anything else happens to that container.
Can I ask a favor? Will you widen that dialog box just a little bit?
No. I can.
There you go. Perfect.
Oh.
Thanks. All right, I don't want to interrupt you any further.
You were giving away my thunder
oh,
there.
Oh, bad, bad.
I wanted to leave that hidden so we didn't distract everybody.
Mayday!
Oh, well. So, I can set up multiple events, so I could pause this prior to it running and after it has run by setting a break on both pre-execute and post-execute.
There you go.
So now I could look at the status of variables or things like that before it runs and then again after it runs to see what kind of effect there was during execution. I also can set my hit count type. The hit count type always, again, hit count equals to stop it on the third time it hits. Hit count greater than or equal to every time above five, or hit count multiple, every other, so every second one. Depending on, and if I choose, for example, hit count equals, then I can choose the value I want to hit it on the third time through.
There you go.
I'm going to leave the other one on always.
And there's the red symbol.
Yes, sir. That little red symbol tells me I got a breakpoint. There's no X in it, so it's not a configuration issue.
Nope.
So now I start my debugging, and what happens? I've got an error.
Error.
I've got a red X, and I've got my breakpoint. Notice how there's a yellow arrow there.
I see.
Okay, now what I'm going to do is I'm going to scroll down. I apologize because of display incompatibilities. I can't show you the whole window at once.
Oh,
but
this works.
You can now see my watch window. I've got a watch window on the copied file. And it shows me the value. So I can examine to see what the name and path of the file is that it's going to go and grab. If I go to the locals window, you can see I've got variables, duration, status, execution result. If I expand variables, now I can see all of my variables, both user and system. If I want to create a watch on a variable that I haven't put in there already, I can right-click on it and add watch, and it now shows up in there as well.
I see it.
You like that?
I like it.
All right. Once we've gotten through and we've been able to evaluate, oh, you know what, George? I forgot one important thing.
What's that?
I want to change the value.
Aha. That's right. You mentioned that.
Yeah. So I'm going to come down here. And notice I can click in there. What happened?
It's now red.
Notifying me that the value has been modified. Cool?
Cool.
All right. I'm going to come back up to the top. I'm going to stop debugging. You can do that at any time because I don't want to keep right on trucking through here. What I'm going to do next is remove this breakpoint. Okay, so I'm going to go to Edit Breakpoints and uncheck the Enabled. And now I'm going to go into Load Data because here I have a transform. Now, again, I can't set a breakpoint here, but what I can do is right-click and enable Data Viewer. I get my little magnifying glass to tell me that there's a data viewer there.
Mm-hmm.
And now when I go to run it, hopefully it gets to that point. No, I have an error. Where's my error? I actually do have an error.
I think you forgot an extension on the products file when you renamed it.
Well, you know what? I'm going to show you a little trick here.
All right.
I changed that during execution, not a variable value, so I'm not sure that that's going to do it, but let's go to progress.
Perfect troubleshooting tip.
Oh, remember I talked about viewing execution progress? Here it is. You go to the progress tab while you're in there, and it shows you everything that's happened. And there's my red X on task copy source file failed. Right above it, it's telling me could not find mod6products.txt. So I think what I'm going to do is just very quickly go out here and see if there is a mod 6 demo files, mod 6, and I don't. I've got product CSV.
Well, that matters.
It does. It does. It does. It does. So let's change this to TXT. Yes, I'm going to change it, and now we'll come back. We will stop debugging. We will execute one more time. We've got our progress up. Hey, what just popped up, George?
Data viewer.
You got it. So I now have the ability to view what's going in between my packages. When I go to the data flow, you can see with a visual indicator of which task is waiting. If I detach, the flow then continues. I'm not going to worry about the error. You've seen what I wanted you to see.
Oh, that wasn't the point.
No, it wasn't. And my data viewer shows me what has been going down the pipeline.
Bravo, bravo.
Bellissimo. And no, I'm not Italian.
All right.
I don't know where that came from, actually.
Maybe it's catchy.
I don't know. All right, let's head back to the slide deck. What do you think, George?
Excellent. So next up, logging, record keeping.
Oh, logging. So you saw the progress tab there, right?
Yep.
And one of the things that I might be interested in doing is taking all those messages that are showing up in the progress tab and writing them out somewhere where they can be reviewed at a later time. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is what logging is all about.
I like to think of SSIS as a very detailed record keeper, if you want it to.
Yeah, you can generate gigabytes of log files very quickly in an active SSIS implementation, and you generate them, you got to read them at some point.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I kind of recommend is that you only generate logging for the information that's really crucial. Otherwise, you're going to end up with a management process that requires a lot of attention to detail to make sure that you're saving an appropriate amount of logs, that you're not filling up disk files and all that kind of stuff. So logging, again, is the process of persisting the details of a package, execution, all that stuff that we saw in the progress tab is what's going to show up in the logs. You have the ability to determine using logs when a package failed, why it failed. It can put error messages in. There are all sorts of things that logging can help with.
Very powerful.
And it is very, very much a tool to help you troubleshoot. Now, the first thing you need to understand about logging is events. Now, I've mentioned those a bunch of times, right?
You have. On pre-execute, on post-execute, on error.
Yeah, and those are all things that happen during the course of a package execution. It has to execute. It has to do things before it executes to configure. It has to do things after it's executing, post-execute. An error can happen. There are information messages, warning messages, error messages. All of those things are things that occur during the course of an execution. And each of them has properties when they happen. The information about that event, maybe the time of occurrence, maybe how long it took. There are all sorts of different things. Those are the properties that expose the information to the developer to make it accessible to determine what's going on. Now, some properties have events, some events have property set A. Some events might have property set B. Each event may have a different set of properties. Each event may have some properties in common with all others.
Sure.
It really does depend on what events are available before you can, what properties are available for an event as to what kind of information is accessible.
Yeah, so like a data flow task has lots of pipeline related events that don't apply to any of the other tasks.
Absolutely, because let's face it, a file system task doesn't have a pipeline.
There you go.
That's the one. So anytime that you are going to configure logging, you need to have somewhere to put the messages. And that's what a log provider does. It is a destination for the information being generated by the logging configuration. Now, because it's a destination, it is a data destination, and we learned earlier that all data destinations require
a connection manager.
That would be correct. Now, connection managers can be event logs. It can write to the Windows application event log. Not really what I would recommend for two reasons. Number one, the application event log is visible to anybody that can get on the machine. And number two, the application event log is space constrained, which means you're going to lose a lot of the messages that get written in there if you don't archive them off on a relatively frequent basis. You can go to an XML file, a text file. You can even write them to SQL Server if you want, George, if you want to put them into a table.
There you go.
That would make them queryable later, but again, be careful. I would not recommend using a SQL Server connection that's to a production instance. You might want to have some sort of a management instance set up. We learned about those on Wednesday, didn't we?
Yep.
Management data warehouse, that's a great spot in a centralized environment to put something like that. And then finally, you have a SQL Server profiler destination, which would send the messages to a profiler trace. To configure and set up logging, you first figure out which of the executables in the package that you are interested in seeing the messages on.
So I don't want to log every activity.
I don't want
to log on every executable.
No, I would not. I would only configure logging for the executables that contain what I call mission critical steps.
There you go.
Things that absolutely you have to capture and must be successful. Then you configure the log provider or providers. And this is cool because you can set up multiple log providers for a package and take all of the messages from one executable to one log provider and all of the messages from other executables to a different one. You're not restricted to one log per package. Then you choose the events for each executable that you want to configure and choose the information for each event that you want to see.
And you're going to show us this now, Rich. And you have something, a clever way of explaining this. I find the students can get confused by the user interface here, but you have a great tip, so I don't want to say any more.
I do, but I got to tell you, you're kind of telling me what to do here, George.
Am I?
Yeah. All right, so let's go in. I'm going to close out of that previous demo that I had going, and come on, too many flash-up menus there. Yeah, I do. So now we are going to go in and look at our logging demo. And in our logging demo, I have a package appropriately named the logging demo. And again, it has our copy source file. It has our load data. It has our delete copied file. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go up here to the SSIS menu, because that's where you start for configuring logging. Once I've got it configured, George, if you look at those checkboxes, what do you see?
I see an empty white checkbox.
Yep.
Some gray background checkboxes that are checked.
Okay, so if I told you that I can turn on and off checking logging by just checking that box, that's pretty cool, huh?
Pretty cool, pretty straightforward.
But gray kind of tells me it's not available for configuration, right?
It's something in the middle.
Okay, but it's got a check.
It does.
So what it's trying to tell me there, anytime you see a grayed out selection with the check in it, it means it's inheriting its settings from its parent. So I've got my logging demo, and each of these executables is going to inherit the logging configuration of the parent. The same events, the same properties of the events, the same log provider destinations.
Got it.
So I'm going to, first off, the first thing we need to do is set up our log provider. So I'm going to add in a text file log provider. It requires a configuration, which is a connection manager. I'm going to give it a create file, and then we just choose where it's going to go. I'm going to put it up here on the desktop, and I'm going to give it a name, loggingdemo.log. Boy, that was rocket science, wasn't it? At any rate, now, before it will actually write there, I need to say, yes, I want you to use this one. Because remember I said, we can have multiple providers, and you can choose which one it's going to. So I check off my log provider. Now I can go over to details, and it shows me all of the events that are available to be configured for this executable, which is the package. And you can see we've got a lot of them.
A lot of them.
Now, not every event is going to fire for every executable in the package, but yet every event is listed. What happens is, if the event is not germane to the executable that's currently running, it will not log because the event will never happen. So it's not a problem that they're all there. They'll only fire for the ones that it makes sense to. So I can choose my on post execute, on pre execute, on progress. And we can now go over to the details. And in the details, I can go to my advanced page, which then opens up all of the properties on each of the events.
Ton of columns.
There are. And you can look, all of the properties for the events that I'm selected have been checked already. So the default value is to be able to get all of the properties for the event that's selected. I can deselect for that particular one because I don't care about the execution ID or the source ID. And now, when I hit my OK button, it will save that. But George, there's more.
There's more.
There is, because now, by clicking on the checkbox for the individual executable, I've now separated it from the configuration of its parent. When I check it, it now gives me the ability to configure a different set of events for that executable than the one that's configured for everything else. And additionally, I can add in log providers, but only at the parent. At the child level, I only have the ability to select which log provider I want the messages to go to. Okay, cool?
Cool.
All right, I'm going to go back to my parent configuration. Let's run this. As I run it, you can see my copy source file failed, just like it did in the old one. So I am now going to go out to my desktop, if I can get there eventually. I had a few windows open. And there's my logging demo.log. I'm going to open it with Notepad. And there are all my messages.
On progress, on information,
on Blitzer, on Dancer. Oh, Lord.
Tag it. It is
Friday afternoon, isn't it, folks? So, all of those events, you can see just by looking at this, if you're not careful about what you configure to go into your log, you're going to be digging through a lot of extraneous information. We've got GUIDs, we've got repeating messages, we've got a very, very wide series of information. So, and that's just on one execution.
Yep.
Imagine if you had 3 weeks worth of 10 times a day execution and you needed to find something specific. So,
exactly.
Logging. That's what it's all about.
And I've seen some take the logging data and then build SSRS reports off the log data. So you can be very clever with this if you really need it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, that does require, though, George, if you're going to build the SSRS reports, so you probably want to put it into a database.
Yeah.
All right, let's go and talk about our next topic.
Next up, event handlers.
Oh, so we're going to go right on with this event theme, are we? Event handlers. An event handler is very simply a workflow, a control flow, that executes in response to one of those events occurring. So instead of writing a log message out, I can actually react to and execute functionality and maybe a control flow or a data flow to move data around in response to that event. That's what an event handler is. They're tied to an event. They're tied to an executable. Error events, George, are the most common ones that are configured, but they are by far not the only ones. A control flow is defined and executed. You can do anything. You could do cleanups of files. There are all sorts of things that go in. Now, to configure event handlers, you choose the executable. You go to the event handlers tab. You choose the executable. You choose the event that needs the response, and then you drag, drop, and configure a control flow just like you would for any other package.
So scope, condition, control flow.
Absolutely. So I have in my VM an error handling demo that we're going to look at real quick. And again, it looks very similar to the one that we've been dealing with right along. But now I've got an event handler that I'm going to specify. So in the tabs, I click on event handler. I choose the executable. You can see you can choose any of the executables in that particular workflow. Once I've chosen the executable, I then choose the event that I want it to fire on. Now that event list will change depending on the executable that you've selected.
Sure.
I'm going to choose the on-error event of the, let's see, copy source file. And now, once I've chosen the intersection, I click on the link, and it allows me to create a workflow. I'm going to drop a simple script task on here, and I'm going to go into that script task. I'm going to write a quick C-sharp script that's going to display a message that says, Houston, we have a problem.
Oh, you .NET show off.
Hey, you know, I got to show what I can do somehow. So I am very simply going to say inside my main message box.show, and again, Houston, we have a problem. And additionally, I'm going to get fancy and put a caption on it that says error. You can see the script result comes in. What did I do? Oh, I know what I did. I missed.
Did IntelliSense go crazy on you?
No, IntelliSense didn't go crazy. It told me I messed up because I forgot a double quote.
Got it.
So now I've got my message box configured. I close it. I save my script task configuration. And now I have an event handler that's going to run when I execute the package.
Drum roll.
I hope so. There is my message. Houston,
nice.
We have a problem.
Will you entertain me and go to control flow?
Yeah, I will be happy to. What's up?
Kaboom. We had our error. So
yeah.
Shows that's what triggered it.
Oh, thank you. I would have forgotten to show them that.
No, that's okay.
But it is good to know that it only happens when the error happens, because if I went out and fixed that, that message box would not appear.
That's right.
So let's take a quick look, because I think I want to show that.
Okay.
We're going out to user source file. User source file, I think, is looking for, let's go to SSIS and variables, which brings us down to the bottom. And it's looking for a source file that is looking for a CSV. I changed that to a text, remember? So now, if I execute this package, hopefully, let's stop current execution. We run it again. Now, I didn't get my message box because I didn't have an error handler on load data, just on the copy source flow.
You scoped it just to that task.
Awesome.
Did just what you told it to.
I like the fact that it worked the way I wanted it to.
There you go.
All right, what's next on the agenda, George?
So the final segment here is going to different environments, deployment.
Ah, package deployment.
And if I can interrupt for just a sec,
deployment.
Lots of new changes here in SSIS 2012. Really, to me, one of the biggest areas of change.
This really does bring in some very, very new things. And if you've been around for a while, if you've played with SSIS before, you're going to recognize the second topic, which is package configurations. And we're going to show you how to do it. But first, we need to talk about the different types of deployments. And that is package deployment and project deployment. So package deployment is the process of taking only an individual package and moving it from the dev environment to the production environment, for example. Project deployment, however, occurs or is used when you have multiple packages in that project and you want to move them as a unit. And the cool thing is, remember I created project level connection managers before?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I created project level parameters?
Mm-hmm.
We talked about that. It also moves those resources to production at the same time. All right. Now, deployment has three possible destinations. We can deploy to the file system. In deploying to the file system, I'm not going to utilize SQL Server as the storage medium for the package. It's going to exist on a directory on the file system. It's going to be accessible by SSIS, by the server. It's going to be accessible by SQL Agent, but it's going to be managed by the file backups and the file resources. If I deploy to SQL Server, now that package is going to be stored in the MSDB database and is going to be backed up and managed by the SQL Server backup process instead. Now, new with SQL Server 2012, we've got the SSIS catalog. The catalog is a special database that you can create in Management Studio that is the repository for package and project level deployments. Now, package configurations are only available in an individual package. If you're deploying, if you have a project deployment level, project deployment approach, you are not going to have package configurations available. They're used to set property values of any object inside SSIS with values that are configured externally and stored in places like the registry, an environment variable, an XML file, SQL Server itself, or a parent package variable. Now, one thing about configurations, George.
Yep.
They can be direct, where you've got one level of abstraction.
Abstraction.
Or they can be indirect.
Double abstraction.
Oh, yeah. Because when you've got an indirect configuration, the configuration doesn't contain the property value to be assigned. It contains the location of the property value that you want to assign.
A pointer to a pointer.
That would be right. A pointer to the actual value. So let's go and take a look at package configurations real quick. I've got my virtual machine up and going, and I am going to access another project. Yes, I've got more, George.
All right.
And we are, first off, going to go to the SSIS menu. And work on what? Do I have it running here? No, I don't. I've got my get logins package. I'm going to go to my SSIS menu. There it is. And I'm going to go to package. Wait a minute. What's the problem here? I don't see package configurations, George.
Uh-oh.
Oh, son of a gun. Remember I said it's only available when you're doing package deployment. So let's go take a look at the project.
I knew you were leading us somewhere.
Yeah. So it is currently in the project deployment. I'm going to convert it over to package deployment. It looks like it is not compatible. Why is that, George?
One or more features.
Look at this. I have a connection manager.
That's right.
At the project level. So you can't just convert anything over to package configurations.
No.
But here's what I am going to do. I have another project here that I'm going to open up real quick, and we're just going to do a new project.
Perfect.
It's going to be integration services, and we will just drop. Actually, you know what? I'm going to create a connection manager. And we're just going to do an OLEDB connection. It's going to go to DemoDW.
Perfect.
And now I've got something I can configure, and it's at the package level. I'm going to go to Project. I have a frozen virtual machine.
It'll take a sec.
There it goes. It caught up. Visual Studio's busy. Well, not as busy as I am, folks. So
really?
You keep up with me. Uh-oh.
Yeah, give it a sec. So to insert a tip here, like there often is, there are five ways to get the same thing done. I could also right-click on the project in Solution Explorer and convert there.
Absolutely you can. So I'm going to convert this over to package deployment model. Everything passed this time because I did not have any project level resources. So just goes to show you, not all packages can go that way. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go to SSIS. Package configurations is now available. First thing I do is enable them.
Looks obvious.
Yeah, it does, but you know, it's not always obvious, Mr. Captain.
Well, the rest of this is not totally obvious.
It isn't. So now I need to add a package configuration, and it brings up the wizard. It's nice to have a wizard. I choose the configuration type, whether it's going to be stored in a configuration file, an environment variable, a registry entry, whatever it is. I'm going to choose environment variable, and then you specify the name of the environment variable you want. I'm going to call it computer name. Then, now that I've identified where to retrieve the value from, I need to identify where to put it. So you can see in this package, there's my demo DW connection manager. If I were to take this connection, this package, and move it to another machine, I can go into the properties and I can assign the computer name property to the server name property of the variable. And we can give that configuration a name called server name, bada bing, bada bang. Individual configurations typically store individual values. There are two exceptions. You can have multiple values in an XML configuration.
And?
In SQL Server. But other than that, if you're doing environment variable registry, it has to be one value, one configuration. Okay? Now, going back to the slides, we have one more thing to talk about here, and that's the difference between package configurations and environments.
Lots new here, all new.
This is where it really gets fun, because with package configurations, I've got one thing that travels with the package. With environments, I now have the ability to set up an environment independent of a package and then point the package to the environment. So now I can configure an environment in dev that has one set of values and in prod that has a different set of values, but the same environment name. And now when that package migrates, it automatically picks up the new values.
Just way more portability, don't
it,
you think?
It really is. It really is. And it provides that external mapping so that you can then determine which property goes to which value. You can use property expressions, and at execution time, you can also specify the environment to be used.
And you have some stuff to show here, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely do. Let's flip over, and we've got our project deployment, which is called deployment demo, and we have our project in project deployment. What I'm going to do is I am going to, before I deploy this, watch, I'm going to jump into Management Studio, because in order to deploy, we really want to have an IS catalog.
Got to have the SSIS catalog.
So I'm going to create a catalog. I give it a password. The password is going to protect things using encryption, and that is the encryption password. It sets it up when you create the catalog, and that's all there is to it. And now I have SSISDB, and that's my SSIS catalog. I come back over to Data Tools, and now I choose Project Deploy, or as you were saying before, I can right-click and go to Deploy.
Mm-hmm.
And it is now going to take all of the packages and their resources, their project parameters, and their project level connection managers. So it loads and validates it. It's not deploying to the right area, so I need to browse through. It connects me in, and I choose the folder that I want. Now I can say new folder and create one right here, which I'm going to call demos.
And a folder is a container where you can dictate administrative capabilities on that folder, security, etc.
Absolutely. It's what gives you the ability to control and manage who can do what with these packages. So now I've created, I'm going to choose my demos folder, and I hit next. It tells me this is what you're going to do. You hit deploy, and it puts everything out on the SSIS server.
Perfect.
All right, so now we're going to head back over to Management Studio, and we're going to refresh the catalog. And now we can see our demos folder. Here's our projects. There's deployment demo, and here's our environments. Well, we were talking about environments, weren't we, George?
Yep, now it's time to show.
Yeah, so I've got my Extract DB list, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to configure. Because in configure, I have parameters listed, I have connection managers listed. So it gives me the ability to go in and configure this specific package for what it's going to do when it's executing. If I look at my extract login list and go to configure, again, I don't have parameters, but I have my connection managers. Now, when I create an environment, I can right-click and say create environment. And now what I'm doing is I have to give it a name. So I can create a prod environment. I could also create a dev environment, for example. And now when I right-click, and I need to scroll down a little bit here so I get to properties. When I get to the properties, here's my variables. And I can now configure a variable. For example, I could say server name, and the type being string. Give it a value, MIA-SQLBI. I hit OK. I've now created one there. When I go to dev, do the same thing. I create the same variable. In this case, server name. I go to my type, string. The value here, I've got a different server out there, SQL dev. I don't really, but you know, I had to give it a different name to make
sure.
The point. Now, when I go to execute that package, notice I've got parameters, I've got an output folder, I've got connection managers, I can go in, I can grab, I've got property paths I can set in there. When I go to choose, I can go and I'm going to go back in here, I'm going to set that and change that variable so that I can map it. Actually, I don't even need to, we'll just do it right in here. I'm going to go to execute. Here's my parameter. I can set it. What am I doing? Oh, gosh. I have the ability to specify in here to use the devalue from the package, or I can. Why is this is not showing up the way I wanted it to? Where is edit value?
Is that the right parameter? Do you want server name or connection string? Or?
Yeah, that's where I'm going to go. I'm going to go down and it's extract DB list. That's what happens when it gets late in the afternoon. I don't have my parameter set up, so I need to set up the parameter. But at any rate, you can specify the environment that's being used, and I go to my value. I can specify the value directly at execution time there.
So
I'm going to have to come back to this in a little bit. So let's wrap it up. We've kind of been going long here. We will come back to that and square that one away. How's that?
Awesome.
So in this module, we talked about deployment with configurations and environments. We talked about logging and error handling. We talked about troubleshooting being a process and all that good stuff. We've got one more module coming, don't we, George?
Yep. We hope you've been enjoying the Implementing a Data Warehouse with SQL Server 2012 Jumpstart. Let's get up, move around, take a stretch, and then final module of the day.
You got it. Enterprise data. Stay tuned.